I think some of the ideas which are part of this work, also things we did not see in this project, are also part of the project Paths Through Utopias, Everyday Life Despite Capitalism, of the two next speakers, Isabelle Frimeux. Was a senior lecturer in media and cultural studies at Birkbeck College University in London from 2002 till 2011. And she was an activist, and her action research explores popular education, storytelling, and creative forms of resistance. And she worked together on this project with John Jordan. He's an activist. He's the co-founder of Reclaim the Streets, of the Clown Army. He was the cinematographer in Naomi Klein's The Take. He co-edited, among other people, the book We Are Everywhere, The Irresistible Rise of Global Anti-Capitalism. And together, Isabelle and John co-founded the Laboratory of Insurrectionary Imagination. And they co-authored the film book in the German version. It's Pfade durch Utopia, Paths Through Utopia, which I think is really brand new. It just came out. And yeah, and they will also center their presentation on this project. Paths Through Utopias, Everyday Life Despite Capitalism, is based on a journey Isabelle and John did for 7 months in 2007, in which they traveled through 11 communities and projects, all of which used horizontal forms of organizing and direct forms of democracy, among them direct action, climate camp, a squatted village, a self-managed factory, Longomai, Christiania, etc., etc. For me, it's a very important aspect of this project is that it does not focus on a single utopia that would somehow describe which path to go, but it focuses on a variety of different projects, 11 projects, and that this really gives an audience or the possibility to choose among certain options in order to define for yourself what would be an utopia maybe for you personally. So, please.
Thanks, Oliver. I'm going to start with this quote from Alan Kaplow that's been quite important to us. We may see the overall meaning of art change profoundly, from being an end to being a means, from holding out a promise of perfection in some other realm to demonstrating a way of living meaningfully in this one. The Laboratory of Imagination, the collective that Isa and I set up, what did I say?
Just imagination.
Sorry, Laboratory of Insurrectionary, that's quite an important word actually. Often curators don't actually hear that word when we say it, but they don't understand what it means. Anyway, the Laboratory of Insurrectionary Imagination, the collective that Isa and I set up in 2004, we're not really worried about the notion of escaping art, because for art is not a thing, it's a means, as Kaplow says. It's a way of paying attention to the creation of new forms of life. For us, art is just a way of applying creativity to tools of direct action against the institutions and the systems that annihilate life every day. For years, we in the lab brought together artists and activists within spaces of social movements to invent new forms of civil disobedience. And we kind of danced between autonomous spaces and institutions. We've done kind of 16 what we call experiments since 2004. Just two to give you a taste. Within the ultra-globalization movements, we invented the rather stupid idea of the clandestine insurgent clown army, which took part on the streets, also took part in museums. Many years later, after we'd gone AWOL and deserted the stupid idea of the clandestine insurgent rebel clown army, we did an experiment within the climate justice movements. The experiment was called Put the Fun Between Your Legs, Become the Bike Rock. Initially, we were invited by a museum who didn't understand direct action. They dropped us. We recycled hundreds of abandoned bikes, ended up in one museum but in another country that were not too upset. And those bikes, the recycled bikes, were put together into machines of civil disobedience in Copenhagen and used for the demonstrations against the UN climate talks. Yet for us there was always a frustration. These events would explode into the public sphere. Hundreds of artists and activists would work collectively together, many for the first time, share their creativity and their courage, learn tools of self-management, take the risk of real disobedience against the state, and there would often be a lot of media. It was in many ways very beautiful. It refused representation, both of the political and the artistic kind, and yet in the end, we would always all go home. Somehow it felt like a game, a kind of mask that we would put on and then take off again. It never felt enough. After every project, we'd go back to our life under capitalism. We would return to our worlds entwined with the state, jobs, rents, mortgages, consuming, family life. We'd get back to the ugly task of reproducing capitalism, whether we wanted it or not. But we wanted something permanent. We wanted to live forms of post-capitalism that would be field-tested for longer. Things that we could pass on, perhaps, to future generations that were resilient to the ecological and economic catastrophe that we were living through. At the turn of the century, German theorist Gustav Lander coined the strategy that he termed the living revolution, and he said the idea was to create networks of spaces that sucked away the creativity from capitalism. And he summed it up this, it's a very, very well-known quote, many of you may know it, but it means a lot. We can destroy a pane of glass, but the state is a condition, a certain relationship between human beings, a mode of behaviour. We destroy it by contracting other relationships, by behaving differently towards one another. We are the state, and we shall continue to be the state until we have created institutions that form a real community. So in 2007, just as the first winds of the financial crisis began, we decided to go in search of these new relationships. And we went across Europe to find different ways of living despite capitalism. And we went on a journey.
We discovered literally hundreds of these kind of projects, communities, alternative projects that were living despite capitalism. And what we did was to select 11 of them that all had two dimensions in common. Not that only 11 had those two dimensions in common. And they were all organized non-hierarchically, most of them using some form of consensus decision-making process. And the foundation was not religion or spirituality. They were obviously individuals that would have religious or spiritual practices in these places. That was not the cement of the groups or the communities. So we started in Britain, which at the time was home, and felt that it was important to start at home when you want to talk about utopia. With a social movement that we were ourselves heavily involved in, the Camp for Climate Action, which is an ecological resistance camp against climate crime. So there was the proposed third runway against the third runway for Heathrow Airport. And the Camp for Climate Action combined education with more than 100 workshops on all aspects of the climate chaos, from science to very practical dimensions. Some exemplary ecological living and direct action. It was important for us to clearly posit that way that utopia necessarily encapsulate resistance and alternative, the yes and the no. And even though all the projects that we went to somehow encapsulated this, it was the most clear proposal in the Camp for Climate Action. We also went to Land Matters, which is a permaculture cooperative in the southwest of England with a very small ecological footprint. We spent a few days in Madenaleda, which is a village which expropriated 1,200 hectares from the local duke in Andalusia through a very long struggle of more than 10 years by day laborers who just literally got bored of being exploited and took direct action against the local duke and managed to expropriate it, and now have set up 8 cooperatives to run the production of the land, and also have a pirate TV station that pirates the Waves of Discovery channel. We also went to a squat in Barcelona, which occupied an old leper colony that had been abandoned, and has now formed a rather extraordinary intergenerational project by reopening the gardens that surrounded the house. We went to an anarcho-punk squatted hamlet in the south of France that rebuilt an abandoned village in France and imported a very strong anarcho-punk urban culture in one of the most rural areas of France, and really tried to develop the most autonomous life they could, and therefore live with as little money as possible. We went to a couple of self-managed farms in the south of France. One of them is Longomaille, that also boasts a radio station that aims to demonstrate and really experience the fact that there should be no hierarchy between the manual labor and the intellectual labor, and therefore the radio and the farm are the two dimensions of that extraordinary community. We visited occupied factories in Serbia, one of which actually was reclaimed and now self-managed by its own workers, and had inspired, through its own victory, the occupation of 2 other factories in the north of Belgrade. We spent some time in a free love community in Germany, and a month in Christiania, which is, that's still the free love community, that's Christiania, which is a neighborhood in Copenhagen that has been squatted since 1971 in old abandoned barracks. And that has been summarized in the way that I prefer by the postman of Christiania in saying, "We only obey the rules of Denmark to the extent that we choose to." And one of the things that Christiania does particularly is to reject private property, and it has really spent, it's about 1,000 people living there, and it really has this new form, it really is a town within the town. So we experience various forms of true democracy in every one of these places. But one of the most transformatory experiences was an anarchist school where 60 children co-manage their school with the adults and make all the decisions collectively through assemblies, from the curriculum to the timetable to the ways of dealing with conflict, and really showed us more than any anarchist activist group that true freedom only comes with responsibility.
So out of that project came this book, Film. We were going to show an extract film, but we've gone over time. The idea is that the book is the documentary. The book is a kind of personal travel log, analytical but also historical. And the film that comes with the book is a kind of, within the tradition of utopian literature, particularly William Morris's News from Nowhere, the idea of setting the present in the future. So we filmed it during the journey, but actually the way it's edited and the way some of the people have played in the film actually presents a future of Europe as if there's already been an economic and ecological collapse, and this is normal, this is how people now live in this kind of network of a living revolution. It's very interesting that we set off in 2007 and the kind of proposal to the publishers, the French, it was originally published in France and now in Germany, the proposal said, you know, after an economic collapse, and so the future is not what we expected, and it always comes faster than we ever expect. That's the extract for the film, imagine it.
What has been interesting for us is that the journey carried on, because we, after we came back from the journey. We went back home. I went back to my job as a lecturer in cultural studies at Birkbeck, and it felt even more wrong and even more incoherent than before we started the project. So luckily, as we were putting the last touch to the book film, we received an email from a friend saying that some friends of his had found some land in France and that they were looking for people to start a collective. So we visited them, saw the place and its potential, and decided to make the leap ourselves. So we were talking yesterday about escapologies. That's what we did. We sold our flat, I left my job, and we moved country to set up what is now La Ronce, so-called because the 7 hectares we bought were covered in brambles, called Ronce in France, and also because it makes for a nice acronym that is resist, organize, nourish, create, and exist, and that encapsulates rather well the 4 projects that are distinct but interdependent. That we are launching, which are a horse-drawn market garden, a vegan mobile kitchen, a self-managed mechanic workshop, and the laboratory of insurrection reimagination that is going to be based there and turn itself into a pedagogic experiment in art activism and permaculture. And like all the projects we visited, this ours is and will be imperfect and impure and full of contradictions and of trials of error, might even fail. But what both the book film and La Ronce are about is actually reclaiming the notion of utopia as the leap of imagination in practice, away from this notion of purity and perfection that cannot therefore be reached, and that therefore really dangerous, because when you aim for perfection and purity, then all sorts of atrocities become legitimate in that name. So for us, it is really about the capacity to imagine a better world or better worlds in practice, in the everyday. And what seems really important for us is that politics freed from the state, alternatives are always acts of hope. They are really an embodied refusal of the present conditions, of the dominant discourse that of powerlessness and apocalypse that paralyze, and also the belief that better conditions are possible, but that this hope and this optimism are rooted in place and in reality and concreteness. It seems to us that without optimism, a critique of the present becomes cynical, and without a place to anchor them, ideas remain just that. So we don't aim to become a model, but okay, that's my time is up. I'll just take another 30 seconds just to say that we don't aim to become a model, because we very much conceive our project as an experiment, a laboratory, and it seems to me that the very act of making the leap and acting upon the hope that animates us in itself can generate hope in others. And that little maybe cryptic thing is actually an anecdote that happened to me when I decided to leave my job. Everybody was telling me that all my colleagues were quite confused but pretending that it was great. Everybody was like, oh, you're going to set up a utopian community, that's brilliant. Are you going to have a job? Are you going to grow in your vegetables? What are you going to do? And it was one day the school administrator came to me and said, you know what? Everybody is asking me why you're resigning, and I tell them that you're going to set up a utopian community. I say all the words, but I don't understand what it means. So I kind of rambled on the desire to have a non-hierarchical life and the everyday as art, and I left her office thinking, I'm not sure she really got it. And when she organized the necessary leaving due on my last day, she gave me that pendant that is engraved with this. And these are the geographical coordinates of a town in Devon that is called Hope. And she said, she explained that to me, and she said, it seemed fitting. And for me, that really showed that, yes, hope seems fitting when we want to think about social change and freeing ourselves from the state. So, thank you.